Okay, we are in Parak-Tet, chapter 9, finishing it up, God willing, this week, and starting Parak-Yud, chapter 10, as well. Last week, we saw the beginning of Givon's plan. Well, we had read about the international reaction to Yericho and Tahai and the gathering of kings who are planning war. And then we saw that the Givonim decide, and Givonim really are Chivi, they decide that they're going to play a trick instead. Rather than go to war, they're going to try to get the Jews to agree to a treaty, which they feel the Jews won't do unless they are fooled into it. And we talked about why they think that, because after all, the Rambam has said his view is that the Jews are always supposed to accept peace when approaching a city. So we gave a few different explanations. But they approach the Jews and they say, we are from a place that is way far away. We are nowhere nearby. And the subtext of that is, therefore, you can make a treaty with us. There's nothing wrong with you making a peace deal with us. And as evidence of the fact that they're from far away, their clothing is torn and old, and their food is terrible and old. And the Jews, who are initially approached, don't accept what the Givonim are saying unquestioningly. Right? If you go back to the Psukim, in Pasuk Zion, it was chapter 9, sentence 7, Ish Yisrael, which we understand, we assume right now to mean the Jews, although it could be argued it's the leaders, but the Jews say to the Chivi, maybe you actually live among us, we can't make a deal with you. So in Pasuk Chet, in sentence 8, they turn to Yehoshua instead, and they try to sell Yehoshua on this idea. Yehoshua asks them what their name is, and we noted last time, Malbim says what he's trying to do is create a treaty with whoever they say they are, so that in the event that it turns out they're not really those people, they can get out of the deal. But they duck the question. They don't answer what their name is, and so that's not an effective tactic. And then we see in Pasuk Yudalet in sentence 14 that the Jews actually take their tzedah, which we understood to either mean they take the food, which was kind of gross given that the food was terrible and old. And so we said they learned from their food that the Givonim had come from afar. In other words, they took the bait. That's Radak and Malbim. Or as Rashi said, they were fooled, tzedah like latsud, to trap. They were trapped. And they go along with this. They don't ask Hashem for counsel in Pasuk Yudalet. They don't ask Hashem what to do. And Yehoshua makes a deal with them. Abarbanel, we noted last time, says that the nation was suspicious, but Yehoshua did it lishma. He did it for the sake of God, because in their sales pitch to Yehoshua, they told Yehoshua they're approaching us because they've heard about God and how wonderful God is. And so Yehoshua does a compromise where, on the one hand, he satisfies the nation by not making a full covenant. He says that they're going to have to be avadim, they'll have to serve them. But on the other hand, he makes a pact as the Givonim requested. And last time we asked the question, it says that the nation accepted their tzedah. It sounds like the nation is happy to go along with this. So the view of Abarbanel is that the Nesi'im accepted the tzedah. The rank and file of the nation did not. It's just the leadership who accepted. Okay. That brings us to Psukim Tet Zayin Tuchaf Aleph, sentences 16 to 21. Vayas lehem Yehoshua shalom. Yehoshua made peace with them. It was after 3 days, once again after 3 days, after they have made this covenant, they heard that they were, in fact, from nearby. These are our neighbors, the Chivi. And in fact, they dwell in his midst. Meaning either they dwell in the midst of the Jews. The Chivi are in Jewish land, or maybe the Jews are living among the Chivi. So the Jews have set out, and they arrive in the city of the Chivi on the third day.
Was it on the sixth day or on the third day?
The third day after they found out.
So 3 days.
3 days and 3 days. You got it. 6 days. Yes, the food is even more stale. they arrive at the city of the. Actually, it's funny. Dan Mikra actually suggests that it's not so. Dan Mikra suggests they're not 3 days away. They're in their midst. So he says, no. On the third day, they find out, and they immediately knock on the door. Correct. It wouldn't take 3 days, right? So that's right. It is indeed on that third day, the day when they found out, that they go to them, they knock on the door and say, "Hi, neighbor, we have a problem." Their city, or their cities, I should say, were Givon. They weren't lying. They didn't make up a name when they said, "We are Givonim." Actually, they didn't say they were Givonim. We call them Givonim, right? But their city was Givon. Veha Kefira. Kefira would potentially be a version of Kfar, meaning a village. In the Dan Mikra, he notes that you actually have, in Ezra and Nehemiah, the word Kefira for a particular place, which is known as Tel Kefira now, the mound of the ruin of Kefira. As well as Beirot, Kiryat Yearim, some discussion in the Dan Mikra as to trying to associate these with places we know of today. Beirot, he suggests possibly a place near Ramallah. So, Veloi Kum B'nei Yisrael, what do the Jews do when they arrive there and say, turns out you're in the neighborhood? They do not strike them. Kinish Be'ula Hamnisi'ei Ha'ida B'Hashem Elokei Yisrael, because the leaders of the nation had sworn it to them, under Yehoshua, by Hashem, God of Israel. Vayilonu Kol Ha'ida Al Hanisi'im. And the people are angry. The people complain to the Nisi'im. We are now up to Pasuk Yotet, sentence 19 in chapter 9. Vayomru chol hanesiim akol ha'eda. But the leaders say to the nation, Anachnu nishbanu lahem b'Hashem Elokei Yisrael. What do you want? We swore by God. Ve'ata lo nuchal lingoa b'hem. Now we can't hit them. There's nothing we can do. Zos na'aseh lahem v'achayei osam. So here's what we're going to do. We'll keep them alive. V'lo ye'aleinu ketzef al ha'shvua asher nishbanu lahem. There will be no anger upon us, meaning anger from God by whom we swore. So God will not be angry for what we for violating the covenant. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to keep them alive. V'yomru aleihem hanesi'im yichyu. And the leaders said to them, yichyu. They will be alive. Vayehu chotvei etzim v'shavei mayim l'chol ha'eda. And they were, vayehu is past tense, right? And they became wood choppers and water drawers for the entire nation. Kasher yibru lahem ha'nesi'im, as the nesi'im said regarding them or said to them. Okay, that concludes this part of it. That's the reaction to finding out about this. What questions do we have here?
Why did they go to them? They didn't do anything. They went there to say what? Then all of a sudden said they got there, and then they complained to their own CM.
No, they were going out of order.
I mean, what was the point? They found out. Why not at that point just go and complain to the CM? What did we do? And da 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 da. But why? It says that they went there to do what? Why'd they go?
To confront them.
But it doesn't say that. They just said they confronted their own CM.
Why were they more like angry? Like, why weren't they more like, you know, this, you just, like, they didn't really say, like, this oath doesn't uphold, like, you guys are not who you said you were, so we don't have to honor our end. Like, why did they,
Right, so that's a question.
Well, how did they even find out?
I mean, in terms of the question of why they went there, and I think that ties into what Roberta is asking now also, to my mind, their initial move of, let's go see, is because they have to find out whether this is true. In other words, whatever they heard, and we don't know, we aren't told how they, you know, how they got this information. The commentators don't really discuss it, but somehow or other they become aware. They need to follow up.
Them home, you know, because they didn't believe them. Maybe somebody spied on them.
Oh, I thought it was just by chance that they got there.
No, because it says they found out and then they went. They did not make
a request. They went. They knew where they were going.
But almost like they went to go attack them or kill them, but they went, and all of a sudden the next thing you hear is, and they complain to their Nisim.
Eidat Mikra actually has this idea, which I don't know what he's basing it on, but he says, Yitachin, it's possible that the Chivi themselves publicized this. Once they got the agreement,
Look what we did.
Yeah, we're actually next door.
Right.
Which, you know, it's better coming from you than letting them find out from somebody else, right? So maybe you should just tell them yourself.
Why after 3 days?
Well,
but why would
maybe because they know that there's this deal where you can get out of a contract for 72 hours, and so they want to make sure, you know. Sorry?
I'm saying, why would an SE so accepting? Like, so, you know, complacent? Like, okay, you're right.
You're exploring the name of God.
Yes, but it wasn't a, well, I don't know. I mean, I missed last week, so I don't know, but it doesn't seem to hold. If they lie, then it's
right. I mean, the fundamental question is still, why are you bound by this agreement?
Yeah. Why? Fighting it or.
Right. Why is this, I mean, Yoshua's game of, well, I'll find out what their name is, and I'll make it in the name of this other nation. Like, why is that even necessary? It was false pretenses. You found out, now it's void.
Well, they're taking a much higher road, they're saying.
What higher road? There's an obligation. And remember, they have a mitzvah of settling this land, right? It's not as though this is just about my relationship with Chivi. Right? We have a command from God about how we're supposed to deal with the Canaanim. We've discussed that before, right? So, you know, that's sort of, you know, step one is if you're going to honor the deal you made with the Chivi, you're also going to violate your covenant with God. Why isn't that an overriding concern? So I don't think this is out of order. Just go back to Laura's question. I don't think it's out of order. I think it's the Jews heard, they went and saw the cities, and then had to decide, okay, now what are we going to do? Yeah. That's the way I would look at that.
Well, it's almost like, okay, we found you out, as opposed to it just being, like, they almost had to go there and say, we know. Like, don't just take it on rumor that we know.
Yeah, no, this is
we know. We know what you did, and we made the oath, and now,
right.
So be it.
There are other questions you have to ask here, though. Look at Pasuk Chaf Aleph. If they're not breaking the covenant, how are they turning these Givonim into wood choppers and water drawers? That wasn't the deal.
The original covenant.
Right, so go back to the original agreement, which was in Pasuk Tedvav, right? Right? Yeshua made peace with them. He made a deal with them to keep them alive. And that's it. But now they are going to be... I mean, they had said, the Givonim had said, we will be your Avadim. Right? We will be your servants. Avdechim anachnu in Yud Aleph, which doesn't have to be literally servants. It could mean an expression of humbling themselves before Yeshua. But now he's saying, wood choppers and water drawers. That's the job you're filling.
Maybe he's like punishing them and saying, you know, listen... can't, you know, dissolve this, but we're going to give you bad jobs. Like,
so
bad job, he's like considered bad jobs.
Yeah, these are bad jobs.
Yeah.
But he's having it both ways. Right? On the one hand, we're going to honor the covenant. On the other hand, we're going to change it.
Right.
We're not going to change the part of it that says keep you alive. But the rest of the terms are now different.
Stipulation.
Right. Yeah.
But if they said we will be your slaves, and that's just actually upholding the covenant.
But again, that wasn't part of the deal. That was just their statement, and it wasn't specific, and it was likely just an expression of humility, really. Not to mention, we also say here, as the Nisim had said in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, but it was Yoshua's deal, not the deal of the Nisim. Another piece that's interesting is that the Nisim are the ones speaking to the Jews. Yoshua does not appear. Yoshua is not doing this. So all of this requires some understanding. First, I wanted to take a fast look at the word that's used for the reaction of the Jews. You catch that word in Pasuk Yichet, sentence 18? Right, Vayilonu kol ha'idal hanesiim. That word Vayilonu is a strong word. It shows up 5 different times in Chumash. I gave you the references in source number 1. The first one listed, you don't have to look it up, although, you know, it's always worthwhile to see these things. But it's actually more than 5 times. It shows up multiple times in each individual incident. But the first one is when they don't have water at Marah. The first time they don't have water, when they're just fresh out of Egypt. The second time is when they don't have food, and then they get the man. The third time is when they want water and they get the well of Miriam. Right, the first request for water, the initial one was when Moshe put the wood in the water and it made the water sweet. The second one is when they get the water from Miriam's well. Then The next one is the story of the Meraglim. Vayilonu, they all complain because they've heard that they, there are giants in the land and so on. And then the last one is Korach, when Korach's group is killed and that whole story, the nation complains. This Vayilonu is, generally speaking, a term of complaint that is a term of mutiny. Like, this is a bona fide rebellion. I actually written in my notes that it's an unjustified complaint, but I don't think that's true. The more I think about it, like, you don't have food, you don't have water. Those count.
Anything to do with the fact they made them wood choppers and water drawers?
Well, this is the Jews complaining. Oh, you mean they complain.
Why use that word? And then,
so it's strong,
that's interesting. I don't know.
Very strong. You're saying.
It's a very strong word, and it's a mutinous word. It's like, it's more than just we're unhappy.
They say here murmured, and that seems like very meek.
Murmured?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Art school. What does art school have?
And I'm like
complaint.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's
but
better.
That's very
murmured.
Meek.
Right.
It doesn't give that connotation of them being
furious.
Yeah.
Right. No, that's true. It's a kind of funny way to look at that. There are two different ways you can look at what the Jews are upset about here. And this may explain the role of the Nisim versus the role of Yehoshua. The first way to look at it is, we're upset at the deal. Right? We're angry about this deal. Why did we make peace with them? In which case, it really should be directed to Yehoshua, because Yehoshua is the one who made the agreement. But the other way to look at it is that they're not complaining about the original deal, but rather, they're complaining about being held back now. In other words, it was legitimate to be fooled. They scammed us, they fooled us, we didn't know, so Yehoshua made an agreement, that's fine. But now let us go after them. Don't hold us back now. In which case, they're angry at the Nisim. The anger is at Yehoshua, the Nisim are the ones who are holding them back. If you take a look at source number 2, Abarbanel's comment, he says, V'lo ha'isat lunal masha nishvu. They had no complaint regarding the oath that was made with the Givonim. Kiyim al mashi hitzilu osam midehem velo azvu osam lehargam. But against the way that they, meaning the Nisim, the leaders, had saved Givon from them and had not allowed the Jews to attack. V'lachein lo hislonu al Yehoshua. And that's why they don't complain to Yehoshua. Ki ha'Nisim hitzilu maz. It was the fault of the Nisim. They're the ones who are stopping them from doing it. So that's the complaint of the Jews. They're not angry about the original deal. They're angry about being held back now, to which the Nisim respond, saying, we took an oath. Now, we're challenging that and saying, what oath? You didn't know what you were talking about when you took the oath. So take a look at source number 3 on your sheet, please, and Radak. Radak says, "Afal pi shehaisa shvua b'taut." Granted, the oath was taken in error. Im lo yekaimua haya b'davar chilul Hashem. Failure to keep that oath would involve desecration of Hashem's name. Ki rabim yishmu b'shvua v'lo yishmu b'taut. Because realistically, we know what's going to happen. People are not going to hear the whole story. They're going to hear that the Jews made an agreement with Givon and then turned around and attacked them. That's what everybody's going to know, because you know the way stories like this work. And remember that the oath didn't include a stipulation. It's not as though they had said, if you are nearby, then we won't attack you. It was just, we won't attack. And it was on the basis of an understanding that was a mistake, but no one's going to know that. That's the concern. The concern is appearances. So even though they would be in the right, if they said, we're walking away from this agreement, realistically, they couldn't do it.
Kind of like the politics today.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Politics don't change.
Well, meaning they should do stuff, and it would be legitimate, but they won't because of what people will think.
Well, yes and no. Malbim adds a note here. He adds that they also invoked God's name in the oath. By invoking Hashem's name when they took this oath, that creates Chil Hashem issues. Which is a whole other layer of trouble. In fact, if you take a look at source number 4, the Gemara in Ksuvos brings this regarding Nedarim, regarding vows. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol neder sheyad ubo rabim lo yachzir. Rabbi Yehuda says, if a vow, a person takes a vow, and the vow becomes known to the public, you can't recant. There's no repealing such a vow. My time with Rabbi Yehuda, what's his reason? Our pasuk. V'leikum b'nei Yisrael, kinish be'u lahem nisiyei ha'ida. They didn't strike them because the Nisiyim had already sworn. It was now too late. So this is the this is what they're stuck with. They now have a covenant that they are going to be forced to honor, even though they don't want to honor it, because of the otherwise it will cause desecration of God's name. It will cause people not to trust them and not to believe them in the future. It would cause too much harm if they were to do this. So instead, we're going to make them into wood choppers and water drawers. The Radak, by the way, says Vayihyu, means not and they were wood choppers and water drawers, but and they would be. He takes Vayihyu as and they would be. Okay. Looking, though, at that Pasuk Chaf Aleph, there's still trouble here in terms of how these words read. Who is speaking in Pasuk Chaf? Who is the voice that says, this is what we're going to do, we're going to keep them alive, and God won't be angry at us?
The
Nisim. Mm-hmm. How do you know it's the Nisim? Because it said in Yutet, right? The Nisim are speaking, right? By Yom Kol Nisim. It didn't stop between Yutet and Chaf, right? Mm-hmm. Did it stop between Chaf and Chaf Aleph?
Yeah,
so the leader said, you know. Right. So why does Chafal have to start by Yom Rolehem HaNisiyim? Right. Why did you inject and the Nisiyim said to them? So Barbanel makes a suggestion which fits with our general perception of how this conversation is going between the Nisiyim and the nation. He says the conversation isn't going well. The Nisiyim get up in front of the nation and they say, we've sworn it, we're going to stick to it. The people respond with Vayilonu, don't hold us back. Right? We don't have that initial speech presented here, but that's what Abarbanel is understanding, is that the Nisim had said this, and then the people are angry at the Nisim. And so in Pasuk Yutet, the Nisim say, look, we swore, and not only did we swear, but we swore by Shem Elokei Yisrael, as Malbim noted. We swore by God. So we're stuck. So this is what we'll do. We're going to keep them alive, and this way God won't be angry at us. To which the nation responds, still murmuring, so to speak, still angry about this, and so the Nisim try a third time, and they say, okay, look, Yehu, they're gonna live, and we're gonna make them into the wood choppers and water drawers, and that's the way that this is gonna go forward. You know, the Nisim have to actually speak to them three times, and that also explains the word Yehu in Pasuk Chaf Aleph. They already said we're keeping them alive in Pasuk Chaf. Mm-hmm. But the answer is, this is a reiteration of the idea, which they're then going to modify with the woodchopper water drawer thing in the third speech. That's the idea.
In English it says, let them live, almost kind of like they were arguing with him, or with the Nassim. And mm-hmm. They have to say, Yehu, like,
right.
Let them live.
Right. The word Yehu is such an odd word. It's hard to render here. Let them live is an interesting way to approach it. What does the murmurer say for the translation?
Where?
On Yehu in Chaf Aleph.
Chaf Aleph. Let them live.
Let them live. Interesting. Okay.
What else would it be?
Well, they will live is Yehu. Yehu is they will live. Let them live is an instruction. Yeah. It's an odd thing. Sorry?
It's a command.
Yeah, Yehu shouldn't really be that. It's interesting. So the Nisim say this, you know, they say three times, we're going to allow them to live, or you should let them live. And so the Jews have no choice because the Nisim have now insisted that this is what's going to be. Now it also says here, they will be woodchoppers and water drawers, kasher dibru lahem hanisiim, as the Nisiim had said. So what are you talking about when you say as the Nisiim had said? What is that about? So Malbim explains the Nisiim had been suspicious all along. They were the ones who asked, maybe you're really from among us, that we saw initially, and we said, is it the Nisiim talking or is it the nation talking? But they had challenged the Givonim. So the Nisim now feel that they are within their rights to change the terms a little bit. Yes, we're going to uphold the agreement. We're not going to kill them. We made peace. The peace it will be. But we are licensed to change the terms because we initially challenged them. So therefore, we have the ability to come back and say, we want to modify the way this is going to go forward. You follow? That's the idea. Okay. So they've decided, the Nisim apparently have decided, to honor a modified version of the agreement. But now look what happens here with the rest of the Perek. Pasuk Chav Beis, sentence 22. Vayikra lahem Yehoshua. Yehoshua called to them. Who would them be? Who are the them?
It could be people. It could be the
Givonim.
The
Givonim. Okay. It's going to be the Givonim. Vayikra lahem Yehoshua. Yehoshua calls to them. Vayidaber alayhem. And he spoke to them leimor, saying the following. Lama rimisem, O son, leimor rechokim anachnu mikem ma'od. Why did you trick us? Saying, oh, we're from very far away, that ma'od which they had added when they spoke to Yehoshua. V'atem b'kir b'enu yoshvim. You are in our midst, which resolves the question of b'kir bohem yoshvim, back in Pasuk Tet Zayin, who is in whose midst. They're in the Jews' midst. V'atem, and every time I say that, I sort of wonder geographically, where is this? But you need to know what that mikra is trying to suggest, you know, in terms of where the cities are, to figure out. I just wonder, in relation to Yericho, in relation to Ai, in relation to Gilgal, where exactly is this? I don't know. But somewhere in their midst. Va'ata, and he says, and now, Arurim Atem, he says to Givon, you are cursed. V'lo yikares mikem eved v'chot ve'etzim v'shoa ve'mayim lebeis elokai, and the role of woodchopper, the role of water drawer for the house of my God, meaning for the Mishkan, will never be cut off from among you. This is your role. That's what he says. You're now stuck doing this. Vayanu as Yoshua, so they give on answer Yoshua. Vayomru, and they said, Ki hu geid hu gad la'avodecha es asher tziva Hashem alokecha es Moshe avdo, lo seis lachem es kol ha'aretz. He said, they say to him, you know, you asked us, why did we do this? We did this because we heard about how your God commanded Moshe, his servant, to give you the land, and to wipe out all of the residents of the land. All the inhabitants are gone. So we thought, better do something about that. We were very afraid for our lives. And so, yeah, we did it. Guilty as charged. We were afraid. And now, hinu v'yadecha. We are in your hands. Kato v'chayashar be'enecha la'asos lanu, asay. Whatever is good and just in your eyes to do to us, go ahead. But that's why we did it. Vayas lahem kate, so Yeshua did. Vayatzel osam yad b'nei Yisrael, he saved them from the Jews, v'lo haragum, and did not kill them. Vayiknem Yehoshua bayamahu chotvei eitzim b'shoa v'mayim la'ida. Yehoshua makes them woodchoppers and water drawers for the nation. Ulemizbach Hashem and the altar of God ad hayom hazeh, to this very day. And that goes back with all the other this very days that we've seen before in Yehoshua. Is that when the book is written down? Is that when it's canonized by the Anshei Knesset HaGedola? Is that today, 2015? El hamakom asher yivchar, to the place God would choose, meaning ultimately, the site of the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim. Now, this deal with Givon gets renewed actually in the time of David, but I wasn't gonna discuss that yet. But what doesn't seem to fit here?
It's kind of repeating. I'll let you live in whatever we already determined that, or the Nisim determining that, but maybe not Yeshua.
Well, did the Nisim tell Givon?
Well, they just discussed it amongst themselves.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, actually. In other words, we saw the Nisim speak to the Jews. Yehoshua is speaking to Givon. It seems to me that what you're seeing is sort of internal-external. You know, the president or prime minister or whatever is the one who speaks to foreign issues, whereas Parliament, Congress, whatever, is handling domestic. Sorry?
Didn't you say Yoshua wasn't involved before? Like he wasn't speaking at all?
He wasn't speaking at all, correct. He comes
into, yeah.
He comes, he's the one who's going to...
Foreign affairs.
Exactly.
Got it.
He negotiates with the outsiders. What else, though, is odd here?
But also, doesn't he have almost a way to Yoshua? Like, he almost has a way to get out of it.
Because
if they
do what
they
said
you
want.
What you want, and he could sort of think, okay...
But then you have the same and what people would say.
Right.
I mean, also he sort of played his hand. In Chav Gimel, he already said he's going to keep them alive. Mm-hmm. Right? By saying you're going to be woodchoppers and water drawers, he is conceding that they're going to be breathing woodchoppers and water drawers. Mm-hmm. So. At this point, it's, you know, what they're really saying is what you told us before in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, yeah, we're cool with that. There is a problem, though, in these psukim, right? There's a flip-flop going on. Oh, come on. It's pretty blatant. Now, if you go back to Pasuk Chaf Aleph, what is it that the Givonim are supposed to become? For whom?
For the
nation. And then, wait, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Lebeis Elokai. Right? So the Nisim said they're going to be woodchoppers and water drawers for the nation. Yehoshua, talking to Givon, says woodchoppers and water drawers for God. And then...
It almost seems honorable. And like a wonderful thing. Yeah, he says that it's a Rimachim.
Yeah.
So it almost seems like a coveted position that they're getting. And yet he's calling
better,
a curse.
Anyway.
But
yeah.
Then,
like
he makes them,
but
then he makes them for the congregation.
He adds it in
the and for the altar of the Lord.
I mean, in the end, he's got both. Let me point out, though, in terms of...
to figure out what they're going to be used for. Whatever.
Yeah, we'll see. The other piece that's sort of, you know, I wonder about at any rate, is would this be a coveted position? The Chivi have their own gods, right? That's part of why we have to get rid of them, frankly.
So why do you want them?
So, well, effectively what he's doing is, I mean, it sounds fairly humiliating. Right, we're going to take the worship. Imagine
the Mishkan seems holy, and
but they don't believe.
Would you and your would you give the job of opening your own Kodesh in the shul to
somebody who didn't really believe in?
I don't know. Order.
This is the lowest position.
Okay, but it's
would you let them clean your
bathroom
just like that?
But it's a bathroom in the base. But still, imagine a Jew being taken captive by, let's say, Christian Spain, right? And being told that his job is going to be to prepare the holy water. Like, he would view that as terrible.
Okay.
You know, I feel like this is actually, they'd rather be woodchoppers and water drawers for the nation than for the mission.
I missed last week. I don't know if this is something you talked about. But in order
I
don't know. In order to make the covenant in the first place, the fact that Yeshua made the covenant, the theme, and Yeshua made the covenant, wouldn't Ivan have to at least adopt the seven Noah? Like, how could they live with... Did you talk about this?
So we talked about it a little bit.
How could they be part of an Israel if they don't accept some basic...
Right. We discussed the question of what it was that Givon was looking for and why they wanted a covenant and what they thought they would get and wouldn't get. And one of the ideas was, there were a few different ideas, but one of the ideas, I think it was Radak, was that Givon thought that if they sued for peace telling who they were, they would have to accept the seven Noahide laws and this whole set of requirements, and they're trying to evade that.
Okay.
So, take a look at your sheet at source number 5 and what Radak does with this issue of the wood chopping and water drawing, and Abarbanel does the same. He says, Kol zman shehayu ha'eda b'machane ad shlo nechleka ha'aretz hayuchot ve'etzim mishofei mayim la'eda. He says, as long as the Jews were in their camp, the military camp, before the land was divided up, so their first 14 years, basically, the Givonim were woodchoppers and water drawers for the nation. But once the land was divided up, when Jews then had cities and they had portions of land, they became wood choppers and water drawers for the Mishkan. First it was in Gilgal, then it was in Shiloh, until it was destroyed in the time of Shmuel, and then in Nov, and then Nov was destroyed in the time of David, and then Givon, which is kind of ironic, I suppose, and then Beis Olamim in the Beis HaMikdash, yeah.
Sorry,
the camera
did something weird, but it's back.
Oh, okay. And then the Beis Olamim is the Beis HaMikdash. So it was in stages.
Were just them or their children for eternity forever?
The whole bit. For eternity. Okay. That's part
you
of the.
You grow up and that's what you're going to be.
Yes.
It's almost like being a slave.
No, actually, the intermarriage point is an important one. Yeah. They're not allowed to marry in.
Not allowed.
They have this odd status where they live there, but they're not allowed to marry in among the Jews. And that brings me, good segue, thank you, to source number 6. And the story involving the descendants of these Givonim, and I think I mentioned this at some point, but you know what? When we discussed the issue of ethnic cleansing and so on, this Gemara came into play. In the days of Shaul, when David is on the run from Shaul, he becomes a fugitive and he runs away to the city of Givon, where he gets them to give him weapons and to give him food. And he tells them he's on a mission for Shaul. So they help him, and they go. He goes, this is the city of Nov, which is a city of Kohanim. Doeg, who is advisor to Shaul, head of the Sanhedrin, finds out that they helped David, tells Shaul about it, and ends up wiping out the city of Nov, except for one man, Eviatar. He's the only survivor. But other than that, all the Kohanim are wiped out for this crime of helping David, who is a rebel against the throne, and giving him food and giving him a weapon. It wasn't just any food and weaponry, but that's another discussion. The side result of this, the collateral damage of this, is the Givonim. Because Givonim are supporting the Mishkan with their wood chopping and water drawing. And now, there are no Kohanim in Nov. So the Givonim in that area have no support. They have no means of survival. And in fact, some of them die of starvation. So they come to David and say, we want you to hand over to us 7 members of the household of Shaul. Shaul is gone by this time. But hand us 7 members of his household and we're going to kill them as punishment for what happened. So take a look at source number 6, where the Gemara comments on this. They quote you the verse in Shmuel Bet. If you want to know more about the story, you can see it there. But the Givonim said, we have neither silver nor gold with Shaul with his household, right? Yutalanu Shiva Nashimi Banavahu Kanum Lashem. Let 7 men of his children be given to us. We will hang them before God. That's what they ask. Mifayes, David tries to appease them some other way. Velo Paisinu, but he wasn't successful. They didn't accept it. Omar, David said, Shlosha simanim yesh be'umazu. There are 3 characteristics of this nation, meaning of the Jews. Harachmanim, vabayshanim, vagomle chasadim. They're supposed to be merciful, they're supposed to be bashful, and they're supposed to be generous. And yeah, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Bashful's hard. But we got the others anyway. But these are the 3 traits that we're supposed to be, and all 3 of them come from various verses. But his point is, you need these 3 signs in order to become a Jew. You have to be like that. Otherwise, you can't be a Jew. And on that basis, Givonim are still, even after the time of David, are not allowed to marry in among the Jewish people. And look at the Gemara there, look at the story in Shmuel Bet for more on that event. But this is where things go with the Givonim. They remain excluded for all time. So, that's the story of Givon, part 1. What we've seen here is the fear that the nations have. We also saw here last time the challenge of managing your own political lives. Now that Hashem is sort of taking a step back, you have to figure out what to do. And the debacle that results here, because of not consulting with God. There's also a really interesting disconnect, I think, going on here. Especially if we follow Abarbanel's read of this story. Remember that, I mentioned it briefly, I think, at the beginning today, but we talked about it more, you know, last week, and the week before that, whenever that was, that this group, according to Abarbanel, is a renegade group of Givonim. Right? Because we said the Givoni are Chivi. And the Chivi king is in the group that in the beginning of the chapter was in a council of war. They wanted to go fight the Jews. And so Abarbanel said that what's actually happening here is that this is a coup. They're not following their king, and instead they're going to go negotiate a peace treaty with the Jews. So you have this really interesting disconnect between nations and their leaders. The Chivi king wants to fight a war, but the nation takes a different initiative. The Jews don't want a treaty with Givon, but Yehoshua does engineer a treaty with Givon. It's a really interesting thing from my perspective to see how that plays out. What do you think the state of the nation is at this point? Yeah, the Jews. Givon state, we know.
I don't think they're happy.
Unhappy. I would think they would be unhappy. Uncertain, perhaps, about Yehoshua's leadership. Right? We've been up and down and up and down on that one. But, you know, he clearly made the wrong call.
Well, it seems like every time he doesn't consult God, he makes the wrong call. He went into I.
Although, when he does consult Hashem after the disaster with Ai, Hashem says, you know what you should be doing. It's a really interesting thing, this up and down in terms of confidence in Yehoshua. And that's going to bring us to Perek Yud. Sorry?
I'm saying, we know what's going to happen, so I think maybe miracles are going to happen now to help the nation, believe again. It's kind of the way it's been, not believing,
Right. Quite possibly. Let's see where it goes. But don't say too much. So, the opening part. Well, first of all, the outline of this chapter. Basically, I put it on your sheets. Is first the first seven psukim. There's a war against Givon. It's not our war against Givon. It's the tribes and clans in the area that wage war against Givon. Givon calls to the Jews and says, help. Hashem supports our war with miracles. Now you can say it.
Okay. Why would they be attacking Givon?
Ah, so that's part of what we need to learn.
They didn't stay with the pack.
They were upset.
Yeah. Givon wasn't with all the other nations that were going to war against the Jews.
That's part of it. There's more of it.
It's probably a smart thing with Givon, with this little group did at the end of the day, because all the other nations are going to get killed. And
yes.
The only ones who... I mean, yes, they're going to be witch hoppers, but they're not dead.
Right.
It's probably smart. They're going to be protected by the Jews now. Come on, all these other nations are coming.
Right. The question is, it would have been smarter for them to actually do this earlier, before he crossed the Yarden, and not to play games, and then things would have been a lot better. But yeah,
maybe
take what you can get. The third piece of this chapter is going to be a wrap up of this war and the cleanup that Yehoshua does after that, and then finally, the last chunk of this parak is going to be subsequent wars, and that's going to bring us into the middle part of Yehoshua, which the part that nobody learns, which we have to. Yeah, basically people stop here. So we're going to have to... Well, I hope they don't stop entirely here. They resume, hopefully, with the end. Because there's stuff going on at the end. Yeah. So, it's basically military victory and land that's divided up.
But isn't that good material to the story? That's very hard.
It's just more... It's tedious for kids in school.
Right.
It's more interesting, I think, if you're an adult and you have an appreciation of geography, number one. Number two, you've visited Israel and you have a sense of where things are. So, that can be interesting. We'll find things to say because we're not skipping it. But for kids in school, it's a hard sell. It's a lot easier to sell kids on ambushes that you can design on the blackboard or whiteboard or whatever now.
Smart board.
Yeah. So
you stated yourself.
yeah.
We're all the same age. Older, so hey.
Okay. So that's going to be the closing part of the parak. But what we're going to see here in terms of the themes I put on the bottom of the first side of the sheet, the return of miracles, yes. The relationship between Hashem and Yahushua, and the way that the Jews evolve as a nation. So let's get started on this. Obviously, the bulk of it is going to have to wait, but we'll at least get, and we'll begin by reading through the opening seven psukim. ויהי כשמוע אדוני צדק מלך ירושלים כי לכד יהושע אז האי ויחרימה. אדוני צדק, king of Yerushalayim, hears that, and yes, this is the Yerushalayim. He hears that Yehoshua has conquered Ai, and ויחרימה, he has destroyed it. כאשר עשה ליריחו ולמלכה, כן עשה לאי ולמלכה, as he did to Yericho and its king, that's what he did to Ai. And its king. I wonder if Ayachrima is a reference to Cherem as in destroying, or Cherem as in people shouldn't live here anymore. Don't know. But as he did to Yericho, so he did to Ai and Ai's king. V'chi yishlimu yoshvei givonis Yisrael, and that Givonah made peace with Israel, v'yehu b'kirbam, and they were in their midst. I don't know who the they's are, so don't ask me. V'yira'u me'od, they were very afraid. Ki ir gedola Givon kachasarei hamamlacha, because Givon was a really big city, like one of the cities of the kingdom, by which we mean like a capital city. You know, this isn't just some town somewhere. Vechi hi gedola min ha'ai, it's bigger than Ai. And remember, Ai was five figures in terms of the population size. I forget exactly, but 15,000, something like that. V'chol anashe ha'giborim, and its men were mighty. Vayishlach Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim El Hoham Melech Chevron Ve'el Kiram Melech Yarmut Ve'el Yafia Melech Lachish Ve'el Devir Melech Eglon. Lay more. So Adoni Tzedek calls to Hoham, king of Chevron, Piram, king of Yarmut, Yafia, the king of Lachish, Devir, the king of Eglon. And once again, Da Mikra tries to associate these with areas that we are somewhat familiar with. But he calls to all of these local kings. And he says the following: Alu Eilai V'Izruni. Come up to me, up, remember Yerushalayim being on a mountain, but come up to me, the Izruni, and help me out, v'nakez Givon, and we will strike Givon, ki hishlimas Yehoshua ves b'nei Yisrael, because Givon has made peace with Yehoshua and with the Jews. Vayei asafu, they gathered, vayealu chameshes malcheho emori melech Yerushalayim, and the five kings of the Emori, I'm sorry, vayealu chameshes malcheho emori, and the five Emori kings assembled, melech Yerushalayim, melech Hebron, melech Yarmut, melech Lachish, melech Eglon. So now you know why these five, these are all Emori kings. Heim v'chol machaneihem, they came along with their war camps, vayachanu al Givon, they camped against Givon, vayilachamu alea, and they fought with Givon. They send to Yahushua, to his camp, which is back in Gilgal, where the Mishkan is, Lemur, saying, Al teref yadecha me'avadecha, don't weaken your hand from your servants. Alei eleinu mehera, come up to us quickly. Hoshia lanu ve'azreinu. Hoshia lanu, save us, azreinu, help us. Because all of the Amorite kings living in this, on this mountain, they're all attacking us. It doesn't mean literally one mountain, it's this mountainous area. Vayal Yehoshua min al-Gilgal, hu v'chol ama milchama imo v'chol giborei ha-chayil. Yehoshua comes up out of Gilgal along with all of the warriors. Everybody's going to battle on behalf of Givon against these five kings. Alright, what requires explanation here?
Well, they said they'd let them live. Doesn't necessarily mean they'll protect them out.
Right. Who in the world thought that that meant we had to now go to war against five kings? Hey, that wasn't in the deal.
Maybe now.
But you like the way they're cutting the lip.
We've gotten used to getting our water drawn for us.
So maybe then they feel like, well, we have to eventually conquer all these people anyway, so here they are all at once. Let's just take care of them all
right
now.
Could be. What else is odd here?
Why does it repeat the name?
Well, it's certainly really wordy. In general, the opening couple of psukim are really wordy. they heard what was done to Yericho and to her king and to Ai and to her king. That's another question. Right, that's another question. What happened to that earlier group of kings? Yeah. The ones from the beginning of Perek Tet? They were ready to
now
fight.
Just some of them. Yeah.
Right.
There was one missing.
Okay. Well, they're all. This is just a Emori. So what happened with that whole group?
Yeah. Are they worried that it's falling apart because one failed?
Well, didn't we say that this was just a precursor to the story, and we're going to hear more about that later? So they gathered, and this is what they did.
So yeah, maybe it could be entirely possible. Well, I have one other question though that I you got to ask, especially in light of the earlier conversations that we had about this. Are you really going to do this without asking God? I mean. Nothing? Call up the Kohen Gadol and say, excuse me? Yeah, can you... I mean, why do this all over again? Very difficult. So there's a lot to be said here, but we're gonna start on this and then pick up with it, I hope, next week. Pasuk Aleph. Adoni Tzedek. This is a side note, which I want to expand on later on, but... What other king of Yerushalayim have we met in Tanakh? Malki Tzedek, correct. Malki Tzedek is king of Shalem, and Shalem, as we'll see briefly in a moment, is Yerushalayim. Right? There are all sorts of nice plays on the name Yerushalayim. I think from a linguistic perspective, just etymology, I think, and I'd have to look it up to be sure, and I didn't look it up, but Ur is a term that we often use for city at that point. And Ur Shalem can become Yerushalayim. But I'd have to double check that. But if you take a look on your sheet at the second side, source number 7, Radak makes note of the Malki Tzedek, Adoni Tzedek connection. He does not think that Tzedek was their last name. He says, Kol Malchei Yerushalayim hayu nikra'im bizman ahu Malki Tzedek or Adoni Tzedek. In those days, which is covering a long period of time, when you consider Malki Tzedek was in the days of Abraham. But over this period of centuries, the kings of Yerushalayim were called Malki Tzedek or Adoni Tzedek, Moshe Nemar Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem. And he explains how you know that Shalem is Yerushalayim. Hu Yerushalayim k'mo shekasu v'yihi b'shalem suko. Pasuk in Tehillim, the 76th chapter of Tehillim, says of God, His sukkah, the Beis Hamikdash, was in Shalem. So that's Yerushalayim. Why are they called this? V'nikru kein ba'avur Yerushalayim shehu mekom tzedek. They are called Adoni Tzedek, Malki Tzedek, because master of tzedek, or king of tzedek, is appropriate because Yerushalayim is the place of tzedek. That's the... I actually realized in the translation here, I didn't translate the end of it.
He was good. I mean, Malki Tzedek, right?
Yeah. I mean, he comes to Avraham. Okay. We like what he says. Other than that, he gets the bracha wrong. He blesses Avraham before blessing Hashem. But
look at it.
Yeah. But yes, no, Malki Tzedek is good. Our point here isn't say otherwise, but just simply to say Yerushalayim is identified as the place of Tzedek, the place of righteousness, and I want to come back to that, but not yet. These kings, according to Malbim, these kings were part of that earlier group, meaning the group that was in the beginning of Perek Tet that we asked what happened to them, but the earlier gathering didn't actually lead anywhere. Once the Chivi broke off, it seems like that was kind of it for that group. I'm not entirely sure that that's what Malbim wants to say. There's one bit of what he says there that's vague, but I think that's where he's going. But either way, he does mean to say that this is a new group because the old group didn't actually accomplish anything. And in terms of the opening pasuk where it says, they heard that Givon had made peace with Israel and they were in their midst. So that can't quite be true. They were in their midst. Well, let me say it a little bit differently. If they means Givon was in the midst of the Jews, if that's what it's talking about, then I have a problem. How can all these nations fight Givon without fighting us? If Givon is really in our midst, it doesn't work. So Mitzudat David says it doesn't mean literally in their midst. It means they had joined with Israel. They're not in their midst. They joined with Israel. But Abarbanel actually reads it as the Jews were in the midst of Givon. That's the way that Abarbanel reads it, is that the Jews are in the midst of Givon. Either way, these people are concerned, they are afraid, because Givon has gone and made a covenant with the Jews, and so they want to go to war. So Or asks the question of, why does this get them so upset? What is this really about? Is it just the Givon, being responsible to not make a covenant with the Jews? So Barbanel has a long piece in which he offers four different explanations for why this is such a big deal. So I think what I'm going to do probably is, let's start with that next time. We'll start with this this piece of Abarbanel about why exactly everyone's going to war against Givon, and then we'll pick up from there.